Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Hickory, North Carolina, and earned a bachelor's degree in health and physical education from Lenoir Rhine College. He's been the Meds head basketball coach at George Mason, Providence, and Clemson. From 1998 through 2015, he was the head basketball coach at the University of Texas. And since 2016, he's been the head basketball coach at the University of Tennessee. His name? Coach Rick Barnes. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Coach Rick Barnes, who's been a college head basketball coach for the last 30-plus years. Coach, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's an honor to be with you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom, please?
Yeah. I grew up in Hickory, North Carolina, and now being here at the University of Tennessee, I'm less than 3 hours from my hometown. And my mother turned 87 on May 21st, and I have two brothers that still live at home with her. And my childhood, to me, was wonderful. We grew up in a East Hickory Baptist Church, and actually my mother is the last, I think, living charter member of East Hickory Baptist, and she still goes to church weekly there in Hickory. And but I grew up with in a family of five, four boys and one girl, and loved my family. And my sister got killed in a car accident right after she graduated from high school. Like most seniors, they take a trip from Hickory going to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. She got killed along the way, and it was a tough time in my life and obviously our family's life, because she was very important. My mom was out working every day, and my mother and father had divorced I think when I was three or four. And but he was a career military man, and I was fortunate to get to spend a little time with him later on in life. And he was really a wonderful man, a good man. And after my sister had died in a car accident, we grew up my mom was raised on the mill village down there, and my grandparents couldn't read or write, and my mother and father both had eighth grade educations. And the one thing we were told, that you got to graduate from high school. But when my sister got killed, I'd made up my mind that I didn't want to continue school once I was able to get to the age of where I could quit, even though my older brother and my sister had graduated. My next oldest brother was in line. He would have graduated before I would have turned 16, where I could have quit. But I'm fortunate that Clinton Sigmund, who was the principal of College Park Junior High School, and Alan Beam, who was the eighth grade basketball coach, and Bill Johnson, my ninth grade basketball coach, and Joe Ryan, and Alice Watts, one of my teachers, came into my life at a time and when God put them there. I really believe, Jack, that they're angels, because they came into my life when I really needed. I was lost, and I knew right from wrong. I knew everything. I mean, we'd been in church our entire life, but just knocked me back. And I went through some tough times, but those people came into my life at a time when I really needed them. And then on through high school, my high school coach, Mark Lyerly, and they're my heroes today. When I look back, along with my family, my two kids and my wife, they're my heroes. And the fact that I'm asked a question a lot: who has been most influential in your life? And I've met a lot of, been blessed to meet a lot of people, but really those names of those people I just mentioned are the ones that are really my heroes and influenced me and had a pretty profound effect on the way I see sports and working with young people today.
Coach, how was it you got into coaching?
Well, again, those people, I'm like any kid. When I was in the eighth, ninth grade, all through high school, I wanted to be a pro athlete. You know, I grew up loving baseball, but the older I got, you had to play at night, and I had bad eyes, and we weren't able to afford glasses until I was in a sophomore in high school. And so I really the night baseball. I just couldn't do anything with it. And so once I got around these people, they were all coaches and teachers. You know, all of them except Mrs. Watts was a coach and a teacher. And I just knew at some point in time in my life, if I couldn't pursue being a professional athlete, I wanted to coach and teach young people. And it was all because of the influence of those people.
Speaking about teaching, what does basketball teach us about life, Coach Barnes?
Well, I think it can teach you a lot if you really look at it. I like to think that, and again, we could talk hours on hours about it, but I think that I was asked a question earlier today, you know, are kids different today than they were years ago? And I don't think so. I think they're exposed to more, obviously, but, you know, words like hard work, words about perseverance, love, loyalty, commitment. Those definitions have never changed. And I think as long as you talk about integrity and you talk about teaching every single day and all those things, you can learn in basketball, because another word I would throw in there is entitled. I think the worst thing you can do in life is to ever feel that you're in a position that you're entitled to something. And I'll be blunt and open with you, Jack. I went through that. I let this business eat me up for a while, where it became more about me than everybody else. And the one motto that we've always lived by here is called Enom. And you'd spell it I-N-A-M. It's not about me. And we try to get our guys to understand that if they want to be part of a team sport, they've got to make sure it's not about them. They've got to be willing to understand what they bring to the team concept. And coaches have to do the same thing. I mean, we play a role, and I think that when a coach starts thinking he's bigger and better than the program or people around him, I think it's going to be it's going to lead to failure. I think players, it will lead to failure. I think that we have to be humble. We have to be kind. We have to love people. I think that when you talk about the fruits of the Spirit, you try to live that. You try to coach that way. So we can learn a lot through sports, and I think it's a platform, and I think it's a platform we can use to really try to work to bring glory to the kingdom of God. And I've been influenced by players. I like to think that my biggest wins as a coach have always been when former players have called back and talked about what they learned and how we influenced them and how we taught them this or taught them that. And that's your biggest wins. And I can say on the other end that I've had players that have taught me a lot as well.
We're talking to Coach Rick Barnes. When we come back, we're going to ask him, of all the coaches he met, who does he admire the most? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Coach Rick Barnes. Coach, of all the coaches you've met, who do you admire the most?
Well, Dave Gavitt, who was a former college coach at Providence College and later was an Olympic coach, and also was the guy, the driving force behind the creation of the Big East Conference. I was very fortunate to be a young head coach, and after 1 year at George Mason, I got the opportunity to go to Providence College and spend time there. And in the 6 years I was there, he had just a tremendous influence on me. And I don't think, I know without question, if it wasn't for him being there and be willing to put the time into me and helping me at that time, I don't think I would have been going in over 30 years as a head coach, because he was very transparent, very open and honest, and helped me at a time when I really needed a great tutor. And he was really more than that, a mentor, but just a wonderful person. And I just thank God for bringing him into my life.
Another wonderful coach, the one and only John Wooden. Talk about Coach Wooden, please.
When I went to George Mason in 1980, there was a player on our team by the name of Bill Johnson, who had been going out to work Coach Wooden's camps for the last 3 or 4 years. And Bill continued to work his camps for as long as he had it. And later on, my son was living out in California, and Bill would go out and spend time with Coach Wooden on weekends or for maybe a week when the family needed to get away for a vacation. Bill would go and stay with Coach. And I asked Bill, I said, hey, is there a way that I could meet him? And I was fortunate, you know, later on, and Coach was in his late 90s at the time, and my son and I both had some wonderful pictures of my son and I with Coach, and being able to go to his condo there in California and talk to him, be able to go out to dinner with him, and it was really neat talking to him about what the questions asked today, you know, our kids are different. You know, people don't realize what he had to coach through, you know. I mean, you know, I love the story about Bill Walton, and, you know, this year I got to spend some time with Bill Walton in Maui, and we talked a lot about Coach Wooden, and Bill Walton said the same thing. He said, everybody thinks that it was all, he said, I wasn't an easy guy to coach. He said, you know, I had long hair, I demonstrated on the campus of UCLA, and I went to practice, and Coach Wooden said to me, Bill, you're not going to be on the team with your hair like that. And Bill said to him, well, you can't tell me how to wear your hair. He said, no, I can't, but I can tell you who will and won't be on this team. And so people think that, you know, I mean, when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, you know, we were rebellious too. We wanted to be heard and we wanted an opinion. But what you realize is that you hope you have mentors and people in your life and that ground you and are willing to tell you the truth when you don't want to hear the truth. And I think, again, Coach Wooden was like that with all his players. And I think, Bill, if you heard Bill Walton talk about John Wooden today, you would realize the impact that he had on not just Bill, but everyone else, where he was a man of high principle, a man that knew what he believed in, and a man that not only talked it, but he walked it, and has had a great influence on even coaches today.
Speaking of young people, Coach Barnes, your future and your success is predicated on very young shoulders, 17 to 21-year-old shoulders. How do you handle that every day?
Well, I think it starts out with, you know, we talk about let's leave things better than we found it. And let's just get better every day. Let's, you know, we know the big picture, and you can talk about it. We know that we're dealing with kids that their dreams are to play at the highest level. I mean, every kid, for the most part, that we've ever recruited, they want to play in the NBA, and we know that 99.9% of them won't get to the NBA. But along the way, you don't want to be the one to ever discourage or dim that dream. You want them to get up every day working to be the best they can be, and wherever God leads them with that, their ability, that's where you want them to go. What you don't want them to do is look back and ever say, Coach, why didn't you tell me this? Why didn't you tell me that? And I think you've got to teach, I think a work ethic is a talent. I don't think everybody truly understands how hard you have to work to be good at anything and everything. So I do think you have to instill a work ethic. Some guys, we've coached a handful of guys who have a tremendous work ethic. We've coached guys that are very talented that didn't work as hard, but they wanted all the fruits that come with being successful, and later on, you know, they can't get it because they weren't willing to pay the price and put the time in. You know, we want to talk about passion, you know, loving what you're doing, and I think that the key is that you get up every single day and you look at each one of your players and even the people around you and say, what can I do today to help this person understand that this is a day that he can get better? I think it's with your coaches. I think your coaching staff has to have that attitude. I think the people in the program, and that goes back to your culture, you know, and it's got to be a culture of improvement, not one of thinking that we've done this or we've done that. Even when you've done this or you've done that and complacency wants to step in, you've got to really try to stay with the mindset that, hey, you've never really ever arrived, because there's always a way you can continue to learn more. There's a way that you can get better at everything you're doing. And so, again, I want us to get up every day with the idea that we want to grow. And we want our players to want it all, not just basketball. We want them to want it off the court. We want them to know who they are. We'd love for them to understand that, you know, from my point of view, I like to be able to share my faith with them. And so, again, it goes back to it's a blessing for us, and it's a great opportunity for us to be with young people, and hopefully they'll look back one day and say it's the best years of their life.
Speaking of work ethic, being a college student athlete today, talk about their schedules.
Well, again, I think it's like anybody. I think what you've got to teach them, again, and that's part of the work ethic, is how not to procrastinate and how to take advantage of what we have here. You look at from the time they get up, I think that they've got to be organized, because if not, they can drift. I don't understand why someone would ever miss a class. And we tell our players, they have to approach their classes and their teachers the way they would approach practice and coaches. They're not going to be late for practice. They're not going to miss practice because they know if they're late, there's a penalty. They know if they don't practice, they're not going to play. They need to respect their professors the same way. They need to respect the tutors that work with them every day in the academic center. They need to respect the people that they meet every day in the cafeteria. That's whether it's the people serving food, whether it's the people taking their card number when they walk in. I don't care who it is. They have an obligation to be kind and gentle and to treat people the way they would like to be treated and the way they want their if that were their mother or father or brother or sister standing there. So the organization is a big part of it. So we expect our guys to be organized. You know, we now today there's absolutely no reason that any student athlete should ever fail on campus, whether it's academically, athletically, at the level that we play. You know, we've got a tremendous strength and conditioning coach. We've got a great staff that's around them basketball-wise every day. We've got a great academic setup. We've got great leadership from our chancellor here, Dr. Davenport, John Curry, our new AD. They're all about the student athlete. And but you would be surprised, Jack, how many times that that they athletes come up short where they think they can miss class and still get things done, think they can skip a treatment with a trainer or whatever it may be. So it's always talking to them about taking advantage of what they have here, and even with that, you got to motivate them to, and the best ones, the ones that go on to be successful in not just athletics but any walk of life, are the ones that have the great passion and the ones that you don't have to watch every day. And you'd like to think by the time they've been through the culture that everyone around it, they see how it is and this is the way it works. And what happens, to be quite honest with you, some guys don't figure it out. And that's why there's an epidemic today on why so many people transfer.
We're talking to Coach Rick Barnes. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the number 8 through 12 players on a team and the role they play. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with the head basketball coach of the University of Tennessee, Coach Rick Barnes. Coach, the players at the end of the bench, 8 to 12, talk about them and the role they play on a team.
I can tell you, my first year in college coaching, I was a volunteer coach at Davidson College. And Davidson had a nice office set up, and they did not have really room to add another volunteer. I was a volunteer, actually, and I worked in a lumber yard to start with, but when I would come over there, I'd just try to find a place to sit and try to do what, and I was, my job there my first year was the basketball camp. But I walked in one day, and there was the biggest, ugliest desk you have ever seen in your life, sitting in that office. And one of the coaches, assistant coaches, said to Eddie Biedenbach, the head coach, "I cannot believe you would put a desk like that in his office." And I will never forget Eddie looking at this coach and said, "Look, Rick Barnes is as important part of this staff as anybody, and he has to have a desk to be a part of this." And I've never forgotten that. And so when you talk about the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, they're important. They're really, really important. And the fact is, you've got to make them feel important. You can't let them, because you're going to need them at some point in time. And so I think it's important every day. We want a culture where every day you have to compete, because once you get out of college, get into life, you're going to have to compete in any job that you have, especially if you want to continue to grow in it and grow in whatever business you're in. And so we want that, but we're going to spend as much time from an individual standpoint with the last guy on our team as we are with the first guy on our team, and in some cases maybe even more, because we know that at some point down through the season that injuries occur. Different things can come up. Sometimes those guys at the end of the bench just get better and they find a way that you need to have them in the game. But I think the biggest key is that you really don't look at them like a number 8, 9, 10. You look at all your players the same, and you make them understand that every day they're going to compete. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Every day you got to get better. So those guys that are playing in front aren't getting better. I want those other guys to truly believe that they've got a chance to work their way up. Roles change from year to year, but they also change within the year. And they can change from week to week, actually. So the worst thing that can happen to those guys, if they don't feel important, if they don't feel like they're needed, if they don't feel like they're wanted, that's the worst thing that can happen. And that's why it's important that we spend more time. And I can tell you, Jack, we really probably do spend more time with those guys than we do with our starters.
You and your wife, Candy, are blessed to have a great son and daughter. Talk to us about your son, Nick, please.
Our son, Nicholas, is, he came out of his bedroom one night. We were living in Texas and looked at me, and he had been reading Billy Graham's book, Just As I Am. And he came out and he said, "Dad, I just feel a real calling on my life that I want to do something to serve the Lord." And the Austin Stone, where we were going to church, had started a little network called the 100 People Network, where they wanted to send 100 people out into, you know, unreached nations, and really talking about the 10/40 window over, you know, in the Middle East. And he got started with that, and he's been gone about 5 years now. You know, he's been back some, but he's living there, and he's got an unbelievable passion for the Arab world. He speaks Arabic now, and he, along with many missionaries, and he would tell you that there's so many people over there that are really working hard to spread the gospel. A lot of people there that are just crazy in love with the Lord, and he would tell you just some unbelievable stories about how dealing with the Arab world and amongst some Syrian refugees and other people where God has just done some amazing work, that where people have come to faith. And what's neat about it, when I go over there, Jack, and get to spend time with him and his team, and truly to see this group of people, and like he would say, and they would say, there's a lot of people doing it, but they are just on fire to tell people about, you know, the great God that we have, the great, you know, Savior that we have in Jesus Christ, and them out hoping to, again, just to love their neighbor, take the gospel to the ends of the earth. And it's really beautiful to see it happening. And again, I could talk hours on hours with you about some of the great stories that are coming out of there.
Speaking of, God has done some amazing work. Your daughter, a while ago, adopted two little boys. Tell us about those boys.
Well, she adopted a little boy and a little girl. They had been married, she and her husband, Josh, my daughter's name is Carly, and they had been married, and they both had a passion. They love the Lord. They love Jesus Christ, and they knew they wanted to adopt. They didn't know when or how it would happen, but about a year, I'm not even sure they were married a year, they got a call, a young little boy in Uganda, and they went and got him, Caleb, and he and Avery spent a week with me and my wife here in Knoxville, and so Caleb came, and then they decided that they were going to sell everything they had and move to Uganda, because they knew there was another little girl over there that had been in an orphanage for 6.5 years, and the rules of adoption can change overnight, really, and they felt like, to do this, are going to have to live there for 5 years, and so they sold everything they had, went over and set up housekeeping, and a wonderful orphanage over there called Cherish, and they adopted their daughter Avery Grace, who was 6.5. But after 9 months or so, the laws again were different, and they were able to come back after I think my daughter spent 10 months there in Kampala, right outside of Kampala in Uganda, and she has Caleb Richard and Avery Grace, and I tell you, Jack, you can't, I don't know if you can love anybody more than I can tell you that my wife and I love those two children. And if you would see the job that Carly and Josh have done just raising them in a Christian home. They're at a Christian school there in Austin, and they had their own, I don't say their own because Caleb and Avery are their own, but we had our biologically their daughter Emma a year ago. But I'm telling you, there's no two children is loved any more than Avery and Caleb, and they've been a blessing to us. And we talk about, when I'm with them, I often ask them the question, because we're very open as a family talking about, them being adopted. My wife was adopted, and so that's something that we talk freely about. But they have been a true blessing to us, and I just think God has something great planned for both of those young kids, and I think they're going to do some great things for the kingdom of God.
Speaking of Austin, Texas, from 1998 through 2015, you were the head basketball coach in Austin at the University of Texas. Talk to us about God's country, the Hill Country, Austin, Texas.
Well, you know, I love the University of Texas. I love the state of Texas, and the Hill Country is beautiful. But I met and have met so many wonderful people, people that are still friends today. And as you know, I was there for 17 years, and I had hoped to spend the rest of my life there. But there was a change in the athletic director, and he wanted to go in a different direction. But the fact of the matter is, God wanted me to go in a different direction. You know, I think God is sovereign. I think that He brought me to the University of Tennessee. I think that He's in charge of everything, and it's all going to work out for the good for those who believe and love Him and believe that, and I believe that with my whole heart. We miss our grandkids. That's been a tough thing about leaving Texas. I mean, being around my daughter, my son-in-law, my grandkids has been the biggest adjustment. You know, when you coach basketball, whether you coach here or as you know, you and I were together last week with Greg Campy and a bunch of other coaches up there in Detroit, and we all do the same job. It's at different places, and we're all working with young people. But I love Texas, and like I said, 17 years of unbelievable memories. And but I felt I know now that God had other plans for me, and He's put me here for how long I don't know. But I just want to do the best I can, and again, do everything I can to bring glory to His kingdom.
We're talking to Coach Rick Barnes. When we come back, we'll ask him about a blessing that God gave him in 2007 when a young man from Washington, D.C. said, "I'll come and play for you." And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Coach Rick Barnes. Coach, how did you ever convince Kevin Durant to leave Washington, D.C. area and come and play for you at Texas?
Well, to be honest with you, Jack, I don't think I'm the guy that really did that. I had a young coach at the time, Russell Springman, who was on the road for the first year, and he had a chance to watch a young Kevin Durant play when he was a sophomore in high school, and he called me one night and he said, "Coach, what's our philosophy on offering young kids?" And I said, "Well, Russ, if he's that good, you're going to be one of many to offer him." But what I didn't know was that when Russ offered him the scholarship, that he was the first one. And then Russell did an unbelievable job over the next 3 years, working the people around Kevin, is, you know, the people that were important, what we would call the circle of trust. He knew those people, and Kevin was one of those guys that really did not enjoy. He's not going to be a guy that's going to get on the phone and want to talk about recruiting. He's just not that kind of person. He's a very passionate person. He's a person that honestly, he's the same today as he was back then. He loved the game of basketball. Very respectful, a person that wanted to be coached. He understood. When I had my first real serious conversation with him, I asked him what kind of coach he wanted. And he said, "Coach, I want to play for a guy that's going to get me better and to be honest with me and tell me the truth." And so when it was a year when you actually could visit in the spring, and he came on a visit, and LaMarcus Aldridge was his host, and we talked, and we hit it off. And I say we, you know, it's never about me. It's about our entire staff. I think when you pick programs, it's assistant coaches, it's support people, it's everyone. And his father, Wayne, had done a really good job of knowing, doing his background about our basketball. And he asked me one question. He said, "How are you going to use Kevin?" I said, "I'm going to let him be who he is." I said, "Everybody's going to look at him at 6'11 and 7'6 wingspan and think he's got to play inside. And the way he plays today is the way he played the first time I laid eyes on him, only better. He's taken it to another level. He's continued to add to his game." And he actually made that comment the other night after they won the world championship. He said, "He's got to get better." And he lives like that. I mean, I could tell you story after story how he's always in the gym. But the one thing I loved about him is that he's a guy that has great God-given ability. He's got great God-given work ethic, and he is an unbelievable teammate, one of the best we've ever coached. And again, the other night, he made a point that he was not going to let the commentary make it about him. He's never going to let it be about him. It's always going to be about the team, and that's something that he really gets. And I've watched him just take what God has given him and just build on it. And he's never content. He's never going to get. He's never going to be satisfied. He's going to always try to get better.
He has a great love for his mom, and she seems to be a phenomenal lady. Talk about his mom, if you will.
Well, the first time I met Wanda and Wayne, Kevin wasn't even there. We went into D.C. and went to his home and sat there. And his mom, Wanda, said, "Look, I don't know that much about basketball. I'm gonna leave that up to Wayne. And but I do want my son to improve off the court. I want him to take his education serious." And I said to him, I said, "Now you do know he's only going to be in school 1 year." And Wanda said to me, "Well, we're not thinking like that." I said, "Well, I know you're not, but there's going to be a lot of things that are going to come along with this year, especially after December, that we're going to have to deal with." And I said, "All I'm asking you guys to do is to deal with that and let's keep it away from him so it doesn't distract him." And I want Kevin to have the idea that he's coming to Texas to be there for 4 years. And I can tell you, he did that. And when he came into my we were in California, he's getting ready to receive the Wooden Award. He had told me, "Coach, I really don't want to leave. I want to stay." And I had to comment, I talked with him. I said, "KD, you got to do this. This is something that you have to do. You know, I appreciate it. Your teammates appreciate it." And he was just afraid he was going to let people down. He was afraid he was going to let his teammates down, coaching staff down. But when he came in and told me that he was with his mom and dad when they came into my room, said he was leaving, he was crying. He could hardly get it out. Well, it goes back to he doesn't want to disappoint anybody. And I can tell you, I watched him. I know he agonized when he left Oklahoma City. I know it bothered him because he didn't do it because for selfish reasons. I mean, he's in a business now. But I can tell you, it hurt him if anyone thought he was doing it and he didn't appreciate OKC and the people there because he's such a good-hearted person that people ask me all the time, is he really as good, as authentic as he comes across? And I can tell you, he's better. And if he knows you, and if you call him, I don't care who it is, the bond he has with his teammates, Jack, he would do anything for him. And there's nothing one thing big time about him. He's very humble. He doesn't have a sense of entitlement. He's as real and as authentic as any person I've ever been around.
There's another such authentic person, legendary in Knoxville, Tennessee, by the name of Peyton Manning. Have you met him?
I have met him, and you know what, Jack, same thing. Just a wonderful person. Loves the University of Tennessee, loves people, but has given back, has really been good to this university, has set up a scholarship program where he continues to give back, and just a wonderful person. And I think Peyton Manning is one of those guys the rest of our life. He's going to be in the public eye because he's so well-respected. And he's so well thought out that his opinion matters, and he's just so grounded that people are going to want to hear what he has to say.
Talk to us, Coach Barnes, about all the good our coaches do throughout America at the high school level, the college level, regarding our young people.
Well, I think coaching is a wonderful business, and I think when it gets down to it, Jack, we're teachers. And you go back, I mentioned earlier the teachers that affected me, and I think that's what our job is. And I can tell you, I got sidetracked, and I hate it, but I like to think I've gone back and apologized to some players that I didn't treat the way I should have treated at the time because I let my ego get in the way. But this is a wonderful business, and as you know, you were up there with us, and you can see there's a bond between coaches. We know each other probably better than people might think. We're around each other. We spend the whole month of July, it seems like, together on the road recruiting. And I don't care what level you coach. I don't care if it's third, fourth, or fifth grade. I can think of my coaches back then, sixth grade, all the way through. I can go back and name you every coach I've ever had and the wonderful job that they did and the influence they had. So whatever level you're coaching at, Coach Wooden told me that, I asked him this question, Jack. I said, "Coach, the coaches still come see you?" He said, "For about 2 years after I quit, coaches stopped, started, they would come. After 2 years, no male coaches would come. Then a lot of female coaches would come, and then a lot of high school coaches. But he said over the years, a lot of people have stopped coming. But he said throughout the whole time, more high school coaches and would come than anybody, which I think is great that there's so many people out there that at, whether the high school, junior high, that they want to really learn from a guy that had the influence that he had. So it's a great profession. I'm thankful that God has given me an opportunity to spend the majority of my life in it.
In coaching, you have a lot of highs and you have a lot of lows. How do you learn to handle each, coach?
Well, I think, again, it comes with maturity. It comes with understanding that, the sun, you hope it's going to come up the next day. And the fact is, that's where, as you get older, I think you get better at that. But you're grounded. I do think winning and losing is very important. We know that. But also, I told you some of the biggest wins are what you do with your players. And so whether you win or you lose, there are teaching opportunities. And that's what you have to realize. You can't, as a coach, get on an emotional. I don't think you can, as a coach, you can worry about being fired. I think you got to work hard every day. And just like at Texas, I thought I would get to spend the rest of my life at Texas, but and the guy came in and had a different idea, and God had a different idea. He had a different plan. So I think that when God opens or closes the door, if he closes the door, he's going to open another one. If he opens one, I think it's great. Something's greater going to happen than we can imagine. So from my point of view, I think it's where you're grounded. And I'm not grounded in my job security. I like to think that I'm grounded in the Lord.
As our time winds down, what advice would you give our young listeners this evening?
I would ask them what they want their legacy to be. And what I mean by that is, we know, if the faith that I believe in, we're only here for a short time. You know, if you think about it, what the average age is, what up in the 70s, 80s maybe, what will be your legacy in eternity? And I think that we've got a chance here in this world to live for the next world. And I think that would be what I would ask, where's your legacy going to be in this world or in the next?
Coach Rick Barnes, your legacy is going to be a great man, a great coach, a teacher, a husband, a father, and a follower of Christ. Keep up the great work, please.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.